This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
No guarantees, no refunds, no exchanges,
do not
no store credit.
Do not collect $200.
our best efforts is the only thing that we can promise, but we're so glad that you are here to join us and to watch us try, dear listeners. My name is Gabriel Urbina.
I'm Zach Valenti, and today we are joined by none other than the Farmridden creator, Eli Barraza.
Oh, hello. Long-time listener, first-time caller. How's it going?
Well, we're so glad that you called us. We're doing real good. You know who's doing even better? Sarah Shackett, who has absconded to Europe for the week.
I'm devastated. I have not met her in person yet.
Oh,
she is
that breaks my heart. I can't wait for you two to meet someday soon.
It's going to be, you know, epic proportions. It's going to be incredible.
I see the slow motion running in the field.
Oh, yeah.
That's beautiful.
So, dear listeners, we are sorry you will not get to hear Sarah's dulcet tones in this episode. But don't worry, she will be back in action soon. And in the meantime, we have our special guest star here to help us turn a bad idea into the pitch for a good story. And boy, oh boy, guys, did I find someone that had a really bad idea.
Oh, no.
Just like something like on multiple levels. I'm just like, oh, this is problematic in so many ways.
Nothing like a multidimensional bad idea.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be great.
I'm so nervous.
So I'm gonna read you this article from CBS News.
Okay.
Listeners, you're gonna find a description in the description for this episode, rather. You're gonna find a link to the article in case you would like to read along. And then I'm gonna set a 30-minute timer and we're gonna have 30 minutes to go through it. Are you guys ready to do this?
As ready
allegedly
as I'll ever be.
All right. So here we go. The article's headline is Los Angeles Church says nuns embezzled money from school to cover trips to Las Vegas.
What?
Oh my stars, that's awful.
Oh yes.
Oh my god.
Hang on, it gets better.
Technically didn't happen in Vegas, so no wonder it's not a secret.
Right. They like almost got that right. They were like, no, what stays in? Oh, wait a minute. No, yeah. Let's go into this. Two nuns who worked for decades at a Catholic school in California embezzled a quote-unquote substantial amount of money from tuition and other funds and used it to pay for gambling trips to Las Vegas. The embezzlement from St. James Catholic School in Torrance appears to have gone on for as long as 10 years.
Wow!
Says a
long con
spokesperson for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. During that time, Sister Mary Margaret Krupper was the school's principal and Sister Lana Chang taught 8th grade students. Both retired this year.
Whoa.
Neither has been charged with a crime. The amount taken from tuition payments and other funds is still being tabulated. But the spokesperson added that she couldn't confirm some reports that it was as much as $500,000.
What?
In a letter to parents, Monsignor Michael Myers called it substantial. He was quoted as saying, I want to assure you that the investigation has disclosed that, notwithstanding this misappropriation, no student or program at St. James has suffered any loss of educational resources, opportunities, or innovation, he wrote. In sum, the education of your children has not and will not be affected by these events.
Sure.
Sure.
I'm just curious, what do they do in Vegas?
Ooh, I don't know about that. I don't know. I don't think that we get a lot of information about it.
They just said gambling, right?
Yes. So, like, I think that, like, it is assumed there was gambling. They weren't, like, spending it on, like, Blue Man Show tickets.
Well, they weren't, like, going to Vegas to try to save people. And, like, this was just, like, a covert,
I love how you're giving them the benefit of the doubt.
I mean, I'm trying to understand.
How would these like the attempts to save so people deep. Spend $500,000?
I don't know, souls. I mean, they're expensive. You gotta buy them back from the devil. I go on, please.
All right,
I'm sorry.
Neither nun could be reached for immediate comment. Myers, who was the Monsignor, said both nuns acknowledged the theft when confronted, apologize, and are cooperating with an ongoing investigation. He said that they and the order, the sisters and Saint Joseph of Carondelet, have promised to pay back the money. Quote, Sister Mary Margaret and Sister Lang have expressed to me and asked that I convey to you the deep, deep remorse they each feel for their actions and ask for your forgiveness and prayers. They and their order pray that you have not lost trust or faith in the educators and the administrators of the school, unquote. The Archdiocese has notified police, but Meyer said church officials don't plan to press charges at this point and instead want to see the matter resolved internally with the money repaid and the nuns disciplined by the order. Krupper, that's the principal, worked at the school for 29 years. Chang taught there for more than 20. So, nuns embezzling lots of money, possibly up to $500,000 to pay for multiple gambling trips to Las Vegas. 30 minutes starting now.
Whew. Oh my gosh, I'm just overwhelmed, but also like, girl, get it. Yes.
I mean, a little bit. Like, I feel like there's a couple versions that like pop to mind. Is there anything that springs immediately to mind for you?
Immediately is a comedy movie. I want to see what these nuns are doing.
Oh, yeah.
In Vegas, right. 100%.
So like,
right, like the only way to make The Hangover better.
With nuns. Embezzling.
Exactly, yeah. No, it's like Sister Act meets The Hangover.
But here's the thing. They said that they would pay it back. So like, how much did they win in Vegas is also what I want to know.
That's a very good question.
Because like, nuns aren't supposed to like have things.
Whoa.
I'm Catholic, right. And I don't know.
Whoa.
No, like you're supposed to give up kind of like material goods and live in the convent and sort of like you take vows of non-possession.
All right, so one day they wake up. And Morgan Freeman's at the door. And he's like, yo, what up? I'm of course God, because...
As anyone that saw Bruce Almighty knows.
I mean, let's just like cut to the chase. And he's like, we need more money because there's going to be a financial collapse soon. And so you need to go get more money.
Uh-huh.
And you got God on your side. And so it's a road trip with God to Vegas. To raise money.
And can anyone else see God? Or is it sort of like,
everyone
else just sees like empty air where Morgan Freeman is standing?
I don't know. And it's not too late to abort this terrible idea.
But I love the idea that God is like, the Catholic Church doesn't get enough money already. We need these two nuns to go to Vegas and get more.
Yes. And like, let's not rely on the many, many, many highly effective ways that the church collects money. Let's instead, like, games of chance.
Go outside the system.
Go to the craps table. Let's do it.
Is it chance if it's God's will? Sorry.
Well, I guess my question is, like, why would the nuns do this? Like, I guess what is, like, missing from their lives in, like, their faith that they're like, you know what? I'm going to screw this. We're going to Vegas.
And this is what is fascinating to me that, and this is why I'm like, this is such a bad idea on multiple levels, because it would be a bad idea if it was, we embezzled all this money from the school that we work in to build a refuge for the homeless, where it's like, okay, you did an illegal thing, but like, we can understand sort of why you were doing this.
Right.
You are people that like live devoted to a set of beliefs that explicitly says that this thing that you are financing with your stolen goods
is a sin
that you are going to hell for. So what were you thinking?
I also kind of want to know how this was found out. Like, was there just some student who like hated their teacher so much that they're like, no, like I'm going to figure out like what is going on, why they keep like leaving school.
Right.
And like they like uncover this whole thing and it's bigger than they imagined. And like, it just goes out of control.
I like that idea. Like the student hacker that's just like out to get them.
Either that or like a group of students like goes to Vegas for like a graduation present. And all of a sudden they look up at the blackjack table and who's on the other side. But... sisters Mary and I forget what their names were. What were you going
to
say?
Well, I was just going to say, to answer your question, like, what if it's like a Breaking Bad thing where it's like, we need to make a lot of money fast
because
insert disease or family crisis or something where it's like, I need to help my own.
Mm-hmm.
And like, the church ain't going to help me. And so like, Vegas, baby.
But it was over like 10 years.
Well, this is like we can drift from the source material if need be. Like, we don't need to be like
that. Is also a pretty crazy idea that might be fun to play with. So I don't want to like throw it away.
Yeah,
it may be baby, not bathwater. I guess.
Sure. Well, let's hang on to it. So far, we have God materializes and is like, "Thou shalt gamble." It's like, well, who are we to say no to the Lord our God? So that's, you know, like that's option one. Option two is sort of like, my God, you know, we need, I'm just realizing how inappropriate it's going to be every time that I just like colloquially use my God in this episode. But option two is them sort of going, oh dear, we need this vast amount of money very quickly for good cause, for emergency, for something. Time to go to Las Vegas and see if we can turn $500,000 into $3 million because we need it by Monday.
Can it be like The Hangover meets Ocean's 8? Like they go to Vegas and it's like, and it's definitely like a comedy, but they are like being like, oh, okay, we're going to gamble and then like maybe heist money out of things. And like at first they're going undercover and not wearing their like habits and everything. And then they're like, wait, no, like we can totally grift some people if we do wear the nun habits because they'll think we're just cute little nuns.
Right.
Oh man. Thieving nuns. It's the only thing more exciting than gambling nuns.
Now I think like the other way to go about it, and this is the perhaps more like less of an overt comedy and more for kind of those like Academy Awards angling quasi-comedies, quasi-dramas. There's sort of the version of it where it's like one nun suddenly is like, you know what? This is all bullshit. My life has been a lie. I'm like, you know, leaving the convent. I'm, you know, like going to become like my own person again. And fuck it. I'm taking this money and I'm going to Vegas and I'm living for all the life that I haven't lived for the past 30 years. And then there's like the other nun that is kind of like, I really do still believe in all these things, but I don't want you to like kill yourself in this like, you know, crazy gambling vice binge that you seem like really set on like going on. So I'm going to come with you just to make sure that you like are alive 3 days from now.
So it turns into like a story of friendship as one tries to save the soul of the other. It was like turned her back on God and everything.
Exactly. While the other one is kind of going like, you know, for 30 years, I haven't drunk. I'm going to drink today. You know, like I've never gambled. Like, you know, like put it all on red. Let it ride. You know, like I've never, you know, never been to a strip club. Time to find out about like what these things look like. You know, like everything that like, you know, all the like standard Las Vegas things that would be especially heightened if you are sort of like someone that went into sort of like devoted, astringent religious service when you were like 17.
I love that the Oscar bait in your mind is a debauched buddy comedy.
Look, I've seen Son of a Woman. I've seen Moonstruck. I've seen Leaving Las Vegas. It's all tracks, okay?
I don't disagree.
I've seen Sideways.
I haven't seen any of these movies.
They're all basically the same movie.
Gathered.
Yeah.
But I feel like then you could have a really interesting like interaction between all the characters they meet all like along the way, and how like one might think that like God is like trying to talk to them through these people, and then the other one is like no, but like really the one who's going wild ends up like doing right by all of these people and like basically like transforming their lives unintentionally.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like connecting into the like God kind of works in mysterious ways, and that's like, you know, all part of a like design.
Yeah, or maybe not even just God works in mysterious ways, but rather saying like the interpretation of events, like maybe that doesn't matter, but rather like the outcome of like doing right by people, no matter like what your beliefs are, can be something really beautiful.
That I like.
I like that. So can you say more? So they're seeing God in people?
Yeah. So I think like one interprets it as like, oh, this is like God coming into our life and like telling us that this is a bad thing. The other one is like, nah, like screw it. Like I don't like care. But like they regardless still keep doing like right by people or helping people, whether or not intentionally or not. Like I think you can get some like cool like comedic elements from that.
I see. So the sort of rebellious nun ends up like sort of affirming that being a good person is good in the process of trying to like throw off the like, you know, the shackles of responsibility that they've like put on themselves for years.
Yeah.
And there's probably sort of a lot of kind of at the end of the day, who is following the spirit of the law, the person that is kind of like, you know, letting go of the shackles, or the person that is very much like, we need to follow the letter of the law, like, you know, 100% right. of the way. And it would probably sort of like come down to a version of that crux.
You know? I love it. It's like, I mean, to make a Wolf 359 reference, it's like Minkowski and Loveless as nuns on a road trip in Vegas.
Where is that fanfic? We need it.
Call us archive of our own. We're ready for you.
But I do think that, like, then they can kind of meet each other, like, more in the middle then. Absolutely. Of, like, hey, like, you know, the church, while it may not always be the best, it does, like, give us guidelines that are helpful to use. Whereas, like, it's okay to not always follow those guidelines if what you feel is right might contradict those. Mm. You know what I mean? So I think that could be kind of, like, a cool character arc. But I guess, like, what I'm curious is, like, where are they going? Like, who are they meeting? Like, right. That kind of thing.
Right. Do we want to keep it in Vegas? Do we want to take
Caesar's Palace.
I only went to Vegas once when I was 7. So, like, wow. My version of Vegas is just Circus Adventure Dome.
Nice, nice.
Oh, my God, amazing.
Have you ever been to Vegas, Zach?
I have never been to Vegas, as far as I remember.
So, it is a wild place. And the thing that most struck me when I was there as a 23-year-old is that I have never been in such a disorienting place. Like, it is, especially sort of like the interior of the casinos, the interior of the shopping malls, the interior of kind of like the, what do you think of as like the strip, is number one, all kind of interior with no windows and sort of this like permanent, you could be there at 4 a.m, you could be there at high noon and it would look exactly the same. Just kind of this like soft, dim imitation, natural like skylight, so that you don't kind of hit that point of like, all right, it's 1 a.m, I'm gonna go sleep. And number two, I have never sort of like had that experience anywhere of kind of being like, all right, how do I get out of this place? Pretty sure the exit is that way. And you start walking, and after a certain point, you're kind of like, no, this is more of this place. Where was the exit? I don't remember where the other road was. Hang on a second. When did I get turned around? And why are there more slot machines and more, like, you know, craps tables? Like
straight out of
and more bars.
Twin Peaks.
Yeah, it's very liminal space.
Yes.
Wow.
And very kind of all roads are very, very like clearly architected to draw you in
and take and to your then, money.
Yeah. And so, you know,
the house always wins.
No, and like, and there's a lot of kind of like patches where like you have bad cell phone service, patches right, where like
you can't leave the house, so it always wins.
Exactly. Yeah. And then
you can't leave.
And then you're kind of like, well, you know, I was gonna go do that thing with Bob, but like I can't find him, I can't get out of here. I'm just gonna like wait until Bob finds me. And then after 10 minutes of like, well, you know, Bob's taking his time, I might as well, like, you know, spin the roulette a couple of times, see what happens.
And I think that could be a really good contrast to like their life like at the convent, where mm-hmm. it is like a little bit more ordered. There isn't as much like visual input going on, so that when they do get to Vegas, like one of them is fully embracing the chaos and the other one is like, no, like what is happening?
I'm so overwhelmed.
I just see the devil everywhere I turn. Like, this is not okay.
What if we leaned into that and it's like literally the casino is hell? And like they like it's actually just like straight up like church propaganda.
I will like, I will only accept this if it's a brand new casino that is just called Dante's.
Yeah, well, like, yeah, why not? And so they get to Dante's and then they try to leave and they just can't find the exit because it's like yeah. House of Leaves style, like it's a house that never ends and they can't get out because it's actually hell.
I mean, what if it was purgatory though, because then you still get the sense that like you, these souls like can be saved. And I'm just going to say this, Purgatorio was my favorite of the Divine Comedy, just putting it out there. Wow. I think it's underrated. But I think that like, if it's like hell, like I feel like everyone is like doomed. Yeah. But then if like the lens that the nun is like putting on it is like, no, this is purgatory. And this is my chance to like help like lead these people away. And I know it's going to be difficult, but the road is worth it. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That might be fun. And like a little bit.
Definitely more hopeful.
Yeah, yeah, it's a little bit more hopeful.
I'm into that.
I,
as much as my funny bone is towards doom.
Because then you do have people like having that agency of like being able to like make the choice. Because if it's hell, then it's just going to be horrible and there is no choice.
It's a much more interesting story when there's choice, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no. and it's also like, who's going to be like, I have a great idea. Let's go gamble a bunch of money in hell. What could possibly go wrong? It would probably be much more based on like Purgatorio or Paradiso.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with this. Like, I don't know how to fold this into the story, but I like the fact that it's going to be these two nuns stepping into this place that absolutely has like an architecture design controlling people's moves and even has like an omnipresent presence above you watching down and observing your every move. Like, I like that it is, a casino is in many ways kind of a space where there is an almost sort of like godlike presence from like the house and the people that are like, you know, running the casino.
Well, what if like amidst the chaos, they kind of like figure out what the rules are because they're so used to like identifying, like if you've ever been to Catholic Mass, there are like pretty strict rules about like when you stand and like when you speak and like when you shake people's hands and whatnot.
This so I wonder, Latin. This is not in Latin.
Yeah. And I wonder if like they can like figure out, they're like, oh wait, no, like I get the flow of this place. All of a sudden I like understand like exactly what's going on. And so that they're able to kind of game the system a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then that could land them into more hot water if like the casino staff thinks they're like cheating or whatever, or like using it to their advantage. And then like, that's just like another thing that they have to overcome, and they're like, we're just nuns, and they're like, yeah, sure, like we've heard it before.
I really like that, and I feel like those two streams have converged in my mind to, and this is like major spoilers,
please. For
except also a brain fart, please help me, Gabrielle, I know you'll know this.
All right,
Cabin in the Woods. I remembered it myself.
One second, Dave. Yeah, you have not seen Cabin in the Woods. You may want to pause this because Zach is about to really spoil the shit.
Yeah,
out of this
I feel
movie.
Really bad spoiling it. But have you seen it?
I've seen it. My opinion is, folks, it's been up for years.
Okay, great. So now the spoilers will happen. So you know how it's like. Actually, there's like hell and, you know, demons or whatever, like, yeah. Sort of. So I'm imagining like the nuns are going on the road trip, but then there's the meta frame of like angels and devils, like,
ooh,
sort of like rooting,
ooh,
for them, where there's like,
oh, so now it's going to like a Good Omens, like, yeah, American Gods kind of a place.
Right. And the devils are like, yeah, like we got them on the road, like it's all going to plan. And the angels are like, fuck you, man, like we're gonna get them. Like,
and there's even sort of like an element of like the demons just wanted the nun who's having the crisis of faith to go on her own. The angels maneuver
right.
The other one like tags along, because then it's like, exactly. Oh, we got our man on the inside.
So then you have like the cut back and forth between like the two command centers of like, you know, like angels co and like hell,
sure,
you know, hell hotline, I don't know what it is. and they're just, they're,
there's,
you know,
there's our title for the episode.
They've got like the Matrix architect like set of screens and, mm-hmm, just are, you know, trying to make this go down while we have fun watching the nuns like end up being good and kind to the people all along the way, like even though there's that conflict. Like, I like that sort of I'm so bad with names. The really kind baking show vibes.
Oh, great British Bake Off.
Yeah, yeah. Like they're just like wherever they go, like they may be like bickering among each other, but they're always just like leaving people with warm hugs.
Yeah, and I think the way that the nuns solve the problems, like, is not what how the angels want them to solve it, but it's, yeah, so unconventional that it's still doing good, and it's kind of like the demons are like, yeah, we're winning, and then the angels are like, wait a second.
Yeah,
no, this is actually, this is working out, okay.
And very quickly, the lines start to blur about like, well, one moment, is the rebellious nun the one that is actually doing more good, is the one that is earning good place points, actually? And is like, you know, the like sort of by the book nun more sort of like, you know,
right, the angels are freaking out, and then like the angel intern is like, no guys, I promise, it's look, this is really interesting trend on this. Yeah, I don't know, like
this is my new favorite character in this movie.
The intern in heaven,
the angel intern.
Can we have a demon intern as well? And it's like they get along despite their war, yeah. I mean, that's good.
I really
omens
like
though
that. Right,
I ship them.
Interesting. I haven't seen Good Omens.
Well, it hasn't come out yet, but the book is Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. It's very good.
Yeah.
This also reminds me of the Disney Channel original movie, H.E. Double Hockey Sticks, which is a very similar. A demon has to go to Earth to try and convince this, I think it's a hockey player. Well, that makes sense. To like do bad so that he can come to hell. And then the demon ends up doing like good and becomes an angel at the end. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah. I think it has like the Eric guy from Boy Meets World or something like that. Anyways.
Well, I know what I'm watching tonight.
High quality television. But yeah, like I think that one of like the kind of the morality of it can be, you know, like just because a tool is prescribed as good or evil doesn't actually like make it inherently bad. It's yep. the fact that like the nuns are using their toolkit in such a way that then results in the good or bad.
Mm-hmm. I really like that. So to bring us out of the level of like useful macro and into the level of like, let's get hyper specific with the scene pitch. I just remembered the most surreal moment that I had in Las Vegas, which is at a certain moment I was wandering around one of the casinos in the shopping areas. I was like, oh, look, a used bookstore. That's a safe place to hide out for like a little while and get away from all the crass commercialism.
I'm so scared right now.
Except it was like, oh, no, hang on a second. This is the bookstore for, like, the book nerd that comes out here and, like, gets, like, $1 million at, like, a table. Because they had the wildest shit here. Like, they wow. had, like, stuff that was, like, 200, 300 years old. The one that I remember that was just, like, in this, like, huge, like, you know, like, glass case in the middle
right,
of the store.
Right, with the lasers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. was this Shakespeare folio from, like, 1640. And I was just, like, whoa. I think that this is basically, like, as old as like Shakespeare shit gets, like, and I can't believe that instead of like in the Folger Museum or like in a museum in Britain, like this is like here at like fucking Las Vegas waiting for whoever has like $800,000 to drop in a like Shakespeare folio. And so I love this idea of like at some point the like nun that is having the crisis of faith wins like a bunch of money and like the table. And just like, oh, I'm going to do something nice for you. Like, you know, sister that tagged along and goes to like the store and buys her like a Gutenberg Bible or just like something like insanely valuable
wow.
that was like there for some reason. And this poor like nun that is trying to hang on is just kind of like, I am so conflicted about this. Like, you know, this is the nicest thing that anyone has ever done for me. But also like, holy shit, this is so wrong on so many levels.
She got it as a result of sin. Oh, yeah. Man. Oh, the poor nun.
We have 9 minutes left. How does this sort of begin to wrap up?
Yeah.
Because I think that so far we have like a good sense of like what kicks it off and kind of like what gets there and sort of like the overall arc. Also, like, let's just like kind of arbitrarily decide like how long is this trip to Las Vegas? Is it like a day? Is it like a weekend? Is it a week?
I think a weekend.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So like they get there like Friday night. Mm-hmm. They're going to like, you know, the idea is to be home Monday morning for school.
Well, yeah. what if they leave like Thursday and then they have to be there by mass on Sunday?
Oh, I like that. Oh, I like that great. A lot. Mm-hmm. Yes. Cool. That's great.
Oh, man. I can imagine them like pulling into the church, like literally. Like
Yeah, right. In, like their new Ferrari that they won.
What if it was like the new Ferrari that like the casino owner gave them because like they're a transformed person?
Right. Oh, I like that.
I really
like And they're like, you
that.
Changed my life. Like, here, take this. It's like God's instrument
the house
now.
Won so much. We're too grateful. Please, please. This token of our affection. The house won in more than one way.
Now, there you go.
And then I guess my question would be like, what is the like angels and demons goal? Is it like they just want to corrupt these nuns? Is it mm-hmm. like emblematic of like a bigger game that they're playing?
That's a good question.
Or is it just literally an angel and a demon make a bet about like if they can corrupt this nun? And it's literally just another like gambling game.
So I think that the easiest...
I see. Well, yeah, right. It's just another gambling game. Mm-hmm. It's like the meta gamble.
Right. I think that there's two easy ways to kind of set up the stakes. I think that one is as simple as like, you know, high ranking demon, high ranking angel. The high ranking demon is like, I bet you that like in 3 days I can tempt this nun to like never come back to the church. And then, you know, like the high ranking angel's like, you're on. The other one.
The high ranking angel wouldn't be like, I don't gamble, wink, wink.
Sure. This is the express version of that. When we actually write it out, there'll be like a little bit more nuance to the gambling, to the celestial gambling. I think that the other version of it is something like the mass that they have to get back to on Sunday. For whatever reason, both like Hell HQ and Heaven HQ get like a memo that is like, oh, by the way, like this mass is like earmarked as very, very important. And it is very, very important that this particular nun be here for reasons of the grand design. And so then it's either like she's going to get back there or not for cosmic reasons.
She's got to give a talk.
Okay, I like that.
It's like maybe her whatever-eth year of being...
Sure.
It's like a guest homily.
Yeah.
I'm like too under-versed in religion to be useful at some level in this script.
I was raised so Catholic.
I was like vaguely raised Jewish, so like I'm like even useless there. So anyway.
No, but I really like that of like it isn't just they have to be there, but it's like they have to do something specific.
Okay.
I quite like that.
I mean, maybe if it's like... you know, the first communion or like the confirmation or something for like these like young people that they're supposed to be like a good example for.
Oh, to the kids at their school, maybe even.
Yeah, the kids at their school. In that case, then it probably confirmation because that's like bestowing the Holy Spirit upon you.
Right. I like it.
And especially since like teens are also in that age of like being tempted by sin, like they're not so innocent as children.
Right. If that's the way that it's going to go, probably at the beginning, there needs to be a scene of like them trying to like guide one of their teenagers away from sin, and that person, and the teenager kind of going like, well, you know, like, what do you know of any of this? Like, you know, like you've like, you know, lived sheltered your entire life. Like, why do you think that you can like, you know, give us this lecture?
Yeah. And then, you don't know me. You don't know my life.
Right.
You don't
exactly.
know what I've been
you don't know my weekend.
Yeah.
And oh boy, by the end of the movie, they are going to know the weekend.
Yeah. And then I guess, I don't know, now I'm just thinking more of like set pieces and getting into like the nitty-gritty. Because like when I was there, when I was 7 years old, I remember ordering a strawberry margarita, virgin. And I made sure to be like, yes, in case it was not clear from the seven-year-old, there should not be alcohol.
That's amazing.
So I'm just imagining one of the nuns doing something like that where she's just like, yep, virgin, please, like no alcohol. But then they get switched. And so then the wrong one gets like drunk.
Oh, man. Oh, I love God, the idea of like the that. Nun that's trying to go wild gets the non-alcoholic the drink yeah. and just is like psychosomatically like
the placebo effect. Really
yeah, right, right, yeah. right. Whereas the other one who was like teetotaling is like ends up actually getting sloshed. And just like lets the other one have it for, and then like that yeah. person realizes they're actually the sober one and like, oh no, like what have I done to like put my friend through this or something?
You know what like horrifying realization I just had? If they are in Vegas wearing their habits, inevitably there are going to be like multiple asshole dudes that are going to mistake them for sexy nuns.
Oh no!
And it's going to be horrible.
Oh, God. You're probably right.
I just, like, want then the kind of straight-laced nun who's, like, already drunk kind of just, like, goes, like, a ham on these guys and is like, how dare you? And, like, starts, like, beating them, but the other one has to, like, pull her
right,
off.
Right, right, yeah, no.
I can also imagine people, like, rushing up to them to get married at, like, just a random oh, yeah. hour of the night.
And they have to be like, no, we don't do
like,
that.
That's actually that's so a, not how it works on a, so many levels.
So we're married now, right?
Yes. Great. Yes, you are. Yeah. We're just going to roll with it now. It's easier.
Actually, there would probably be like a lot of people like coming up to them just like, bless this die, please. Or like, you know, like, bless this hand or, you know, this pack of cards or whatever.
What if like when she wins like the insane amount of money to buy the Bible, it's she didn't actually win. It was someone else who thought she was a lucky charm and decided to like split their winnings
oh,
with her.
Oh, I really, really That's like really that. Good. I really quite like that.
It's but then roller. Like by interacting like... she changes that person's life for like ever and they end up like donating it to charity or like something like that. So right. you still have like the doing God's work in unusual ways.
Right. And like before that, they were like a startup bro that was like, Ugh. You know, super just like, you know, like we're going to go to Silicon Valley and make all the money and, you know, and like buy a helicopter to go to our private island.
I was
and
born then. To go up and to the right. My middle name is 10X.
No.
I'm sorry.
I think I sat next to one of those people on the train today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was like, oh, no. I don't like the sound of your phone call. Oh, man.
All right, clearly, guys, they need to gamble near nuns.
We have one more minute left for any minute. Last Las Vegas set pieces. Who are like the big celebrities that like have like main shows in Las Vegas now that these people are going to encounter in the movie version of
Britney Spears went, took a break, but I know that she had a residency.
Yeah. Is Celine Dion like still?
Maybe. I think she is. And then, I mean, I kind of want them to go to a magic show.
Oh, they have to. Absolutely. Oh, so 100%. Good. Yeah.
And then.
But which magician?
Ooh, I don't know. Siegfried and Roy aren't doing it anymore, right?
No. We can CGI their
Penn and Teller. Look, those are the only magicians I know.
Okay.
And then I also, I do kind of want to see them like go to Circus Circus and like go on like the roller coaster and stuff. And like their hats are like flying back. That's
so good.
That's like when everything is like actually kind of fun in the movie. And they're just like two nuns having a good time.
No, and that's probably when like the like very by the book nun, her heart starts to melt a little bit. And to be like, oh, I grudgingly admit that this is not the worst time that I've ever had.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, what other Las Vegas set pieces are there? The Bellagio?
Yes, the like the fountains.
Yeah.
Now I'm just thinking about Fear and Loathing.
I'm just thinking about all of the Ocean's movies and my experience as a 7-year-old.
Uh-huh.
Well, unfortunately, that was the time that we had for that.
Do you have a name for this?
I don't know. I don't think that like we quite landed on something that was like, yes, that's the title for the film or for the TV show.
I think it's probably more of a movie or miniseries.
So. Yeah.
I mean, I can only think of generic things like Sin City.
I think this is a made for TV film.
Oh, like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Probably. Yes.
Yeah. I could see FX doing
Souls
it. Souls
Gamble?
Well, dear listeners, we're gonna keep talking about this amongst ourselves. We're going to figure this out. But we'll be right back after these messages.
Hello, dear listeners. Zach Valenti here, breaking into the show really quick with this message. Wouldn't it be amazing if we took the idea we just created, or one of the crazy ideas we've developed on this show, and wrote it into a feature-length movie script? We would love to do it, and we would love your support to make it possible. When we pass the $150 mark on Patreon, we will start to write one of these bad ideas that you, our Patreon supporters and listeners, will be able to vote on. And to learn more about that and sign up and pledge your financial support today, you can do so at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. One more time, that's nobadideaspodcast.com/support, where you'll be able to contribute weekly funds to support every one of these episodes' productions. Makes a huge difference in us being able to keep the lights on, spend more time producing creative things that we're proud of, and if we cross that $150 mark, actually writing one of these bad ideas into, hopefully, a great script. Thank you so much for considering. If you support us, thank you so much for that. Thank you all for listening. And now, without further ado, back to the show.
All right, you guys, welcome back to No Bad Ideas here for the back half. And, you know, this is a chance for us to have kind of like a little bit more of an unstructured, free-form conversation about creativity, about where we are, what we're thinking, what we're kind of like grappling with, any or all of the above. And the topic that we're going to be wrestling with today, I guess, is like a little bit of like our superhero origin stories, I suppose.
Yeah, kind of like how did you come to find storytelling as like the thing you wanted to do?
Mm-hmm.
Like what in either your childhood or growing up, whatever, influenced you to want to pursue it and like really like push for that beyond just telling stories amongst your friends and family?
Right. Do you want to go first, Zach? Should I dive in?
I'm a little bit like I'd love to hear your story, Eli.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, as a kid, whenever family was visiting after dinner, we would all like play cards and drink coffee and tell stories. And so there was already this really important, I guess, like oral storytelling facet to my life growing up. And then I was very fortunate in that my parents were pretty adamant about, you know, taking me like to the theater and like having me engage with art and, you know, constantly communicating and writing and drawing and all of that stuff. So as I grew older, I realized, oh, this is valuable. Like, this is something that my family, that my community sees as important. And I want to have a, like, I guess, a bigger part of that to the kind of grander community, so to speak. So by the time I was in high school, I was pretty dead set on going to film school. And let's just say some of my parents were not a big fan. And I was so confused because I was like, no, but like growing up, like you clearly valued this.
Yeah.
Like you
right.
encouraged me. And so that was kind of like hard. And I think as soon as I actually started to do well within the industry, like as soon as I started to get like internships and finally like get a job in the industry and whatnot, was when I finally like really got that support that I had like been wanting. But there was an interesting dissonance for a while. But yeah, that's kind of like how I really got into storytelling. I mean, if you look at my fifth grade yearbook, it says that I wanted to be a successful actress. And I just commend wow. small me for saying successful. Like, good for her. But it kind of just like transformed into a general interest in storytelling. So now like I focus more on like writing. And I think that's why so much of my work tends to be pretty intimate. Like with the Far Meridian, it's a lot of conversations and people conveying their stories. And I think it is that influence of those late night chats over, you know, coffee and cards.
Hmm. And with the resistance to pursuing this, was it sort of coming from a place of like, this is not financially stable, or like, you know, or from somewhere more of just kind of like, this is not sort of something that is like a career and like is something that people should do kind of like on side from like the main thing that they do?
Yeah, I think it was primarily a financial thing. Everyone wanted me to be a lawyer. I did mock trial for like 4 years in high school.
Oh, wow.
And was very
classic.
Good at it. And got so yeah, everyone thought I would be a lawyer.
Go
and
get
we're
that money.
Yeah, well, but also a lot of lawyers are in debt because law school is expensive too.
Yeah.
But anyways, so when I was kind of like meeting that resistance, I was like, oh, like, so you view this as only something to be consumed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that kind of irked me because I felt like it wasn't kind of giving credit to the people who like do make it, you know, and do put so much like hard work and effort into it and do risk financial stability in order to be able to tell their stories. I think what really bothered me was like how dismissive it was. And it wasn't even just like, oh, like financial stability. Yeah, that's a pretty reasonable concern. But at the end of the day, like having your, you know, desire to be a storyteller, to connect people, to like really kind of explore humanity and existence and whatnot as frivolous was disappointing, I think.
Interesting. That makes, unfortunately, sense. I've met a lot of people that have sort of like similar outlooks. And yeah.
So I guess what kept you going through that?
Obsession and a lack of understanding of people in a weird way. So like growing up, I definitely had a hard time understanding how to interact with people, what people want out of a conversation. And that's, I mean, I have social anxiety like most podcasters. But
like I'm finding like most people on planet Earth, like, yeah,
they do. And I think because like I identified that as a weakness so young, I was like, I need to work on this. I need to like work really hard on understanding other people and work hard on hiding the fact that oftentimes I'm so confused as to what's going on. And I think like, for example, acting was really helpful because, you know, when you're doing scene study, you get to ask those questions like, why is this person saying this? What is their ulterior motive? What do they want out of the scene? And I think that helped contextualize human behavior for me and like gave me the tools to be able to deal with it. And so I think it was internally like so important to me that when other people didn't see it that way. It was like, oh, I guess like looking back, they didn't understand like how much I personally as a human like needed it, because I had so many friends growing up who it was so easy for them to just like hang out and talk and whatnot. But for me, it was like, okay, I have to follow the conversation and I'm going to say something now. Oh no, we've moved on. Okay. Right. You're going to be fine. Maybe it'll go back later. Now you have to prep a new thing to say. Yep. And it was just like constantly trying to figure people out. And yeah. I think like through art, that's kind of what I love doing, is exploring people and like recognizing and respecting the paradigms that other people come from. And that was the big thing that I had to come to terms with too, is recognizing the people who had those concerns about going into storytelling as a career, is that, you know, some of those concerns are valid. And I do have to respect that they are coming from very different life experiences than myself.
Mm-hmm.
And like understand and be able to say like, okay, how can I effectively explain why this is important to me to this person who, you know, has a vastly different opinion? And also, will I be okay if I don't change their mind?
Yeah.
Mm.
Which is kind of like the big thing with art is like, you know, when we're telling stories and whatnot, like, yeah, we're offering like up a perspective and whatnot. But, you know, is your goal to like change someone's mind? Is your goal to just like allow them to see a new view that they hadn't seen before? You know what I mean? And so that's what I think is so cool about art and storytelling, is the fact that you can kind of play with that and have fun.
Yeah.
Love that.
But yeah, what about you guys? Like, is there anything like when you were growing up that you're like, oh, like that makes sense why I was so drawn to storytelling? You know what I mean?
You know, I think that for me, a lot of it comes down to I was an only child. For a long time, I was an only grandchild. And while I definitely had a lot of people my age around me, and I definitely had friends, I definitely had sort of like cousins my age, there was a large portion of like, and every day this is now the part where I am alone, and sort of like the only other person around is my mother, who is older than me and sort of has like her own things going on. So I kind of need to have surrogate human relationships, and those sort of like, you know, surrogate human friends were from an early age sort of like books, TV shows, movies. I have recently been kind of like reckoning with how much like my love for narratives like really comes from video games too a lot of the time. And I think that that is a like undervalued influencer in a lot of people that sort of like came up from the 80s onwards as something that like instills an early love of narrative and an early love of kind of like storytelling and relationship through media, as opposed to kind of like relationships with a person that is standing physically in front of you. And I honestly like can't, I don't remember if there was an aha moment necessarily. Because like the first sort of like real profession that I wanted to have, once I got over like space cowboy and like, you know, like dinosaur hunter and, you know, archaeologist, by which I mean Indiana Jones. The sort of first like, no, like the first real aspirational profession that I had that was actually a profession that you could do was writer. And I must have been like 11, 10, like sort of like in that period, but I can't remember kind of what set that pebble rolling down the mountain, aside from just kind of a sense of like, oh, I sort of like really, really sort of like love these stories, and I love kind of like seeing what they do to me, and I love kind of then like giving them to other people and seeing what they do to them. It'd be pretty cool to one day sort of like make my own stories and share those instead of kind of like sharing these things that other people have made that I found meaning, that I found meaningful. And my family, God bless them, they are 100% like on the engineering side. Like my mother has three siblings. Her and her two brothers are all engineers. Like she's a computer engineer. My two uncles both have like degrees in like civil engineering. My aunt is a like animal sciences person, kind of like hardcore biologist person, absolutely like left brain family. And they were all like very, very supportive of it. They were all just kind of like, if that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. And I think that they've always sort of like been like very much like, if this is really what calls you and like you're going to be passionate about it and you're going to be hardworking about it, by all means, do it. weirdly, I got like way more discouragement from teachers and from people in my school than I ever did from my family. I think that that's kind of where there was like real resistance.
Yeah. That's interesting. I had a lot of teachers who were pretty supportive of it, but I think it's because they saw that I would always draw in class and were like, clearly you need to be doing something art related.
Right.
Well, and there's a, like, this is where we get into a lot of my, like, I have sort of this recurring joke about, like, one day I want to do a, like, TED talk about how, like, oppressive power structures are weirdly insidious and kind of stay alive in ways that, like, you don't really expect. Because a lot of that discouragement kind of came from people sort of being like, oh, you want to be a writer? Okay. That means that you have a responsibility to tell stories about the disenfranchised, oppressed Latino worker. Like, you have a responsibility to tell these stories about, like, you know, the, like, impoverished, you know, like, person in need of humanitarian aid. You have a real need to kind of, like, dig into the horror and the trauma of this community and sort of present that. And when you're sort of, like, taking your first tentative steps into, like, the world of writing fiction and, you know, the things that you're looking up to are Star Wars and Indiana Jones and sort of, like, these, like, fantasy stories of empowerment rather than sort of these, like, you know, stories of confronting your powerlessness, it can be extremely discouraging to kind of hear, oh, shit, I need to tell that or I am letting down my cultural responsibility. And I know a lot of sort of, like, people that, like, were brilliant writers at age 15 that got discouraged by, like, I don't want to go down that path. Like, those are not stories that hold any interest to me and nobody wants to look, you know, nobody kind of in a position of power to help me become a better writer wants to look at anything that I'm doing that isn't, like, you know, social realism. So I think that there's a lot of kind of well-meaning wanting to craft the next Gabriel Garcia Marquez that is stopping the, like, Latino J.J. Abrams from, like, taking shape in, like, you know, Central America. Thank you for coming to my, like, over-opinionated chat about power structures.
No, I mean, like, that's so true. Like, with a lot of stories that I've been making lately, it's like, I want to find the hope. I want to, like, have, like, people have happiness and, like, be able to envision that for themselves and, like, trust that, like, yes, even if things can be hard, like, there is still joy to be had in the present and in the future, you know? And, it, like, getting, like, bogged down by trauma, it's like, okay, yes, we can keep picking at this wound. And some people can, like, keep doing that and, like, more power to them. But for others, it's important to, like, know that there is, like, healing and moving on from that and, like, fun. Like, let's have fun. Like, it's okay to have fun.
No, like, I don't know about you guys, but, like, the curriculum for, like, things that we read in school was extremely based on kind of, like, and now we look into the abyss, stare at it, children. Nope, don't look away. Keep looking. Look at how horrible life is. Look at how terrible life is. Okay, now raise your hands. Who wants to work in literature? And everyone was like, no, I want to get away from this, for God's sake.
I remember my English class had to summarize this book. I think it's A Fine Balance that takes place in India in the 1970s during the emergency. And my group had, like, the four chapters of happiness in this, like, 300 plus page book. And we were like, yes, like, don't have to just wallow in the misery part. We get to, like, summarize the happy part. But it was like, it was like only, I think, like, four chapters in, like, this whole book. Yeah. Because, I mean, like, that was a very tough time in India. But at the same time, it's like very little of what we read was, like, hopeful and, like, bright and whatnot. And it's just kind of like, all right, but, like, how are you empowering people to envision a greater future?
Yeah.
You know,
I feel like I don't have nearly as good a story of how I stumbled into loving storytelling.
Doesn't matter if it's good, it's just yours.
Yeah.
And that is what makes it good.
Well, we'll see. I definitely grew up raised by television. And so I think, and video games and these things.
TV was my babysitter.
Yeah, media in general, because I was also an only child and had lots of alone time.
Pretty awesome.
Can't complain. I definitely did as a kid and begged my parents for a sibling.
I didn't. But, I love the alone time.
Nice. Yeah.
But again, that comes down to the like social anxiety. Like, you know, I would get home from school and just be like, I don't want to talk to fucking anyone until tomorrow. Like, that's it. I'm sorry, I'm cutting in.
Please continue. Right. I just remember being in kindergarten and having just learned, or not kindergarten, in first grade, and having just learned how to read and starting to write. And I remember seeing this like really dark movie. Like I like walked in on my dad watching some drama towards the end of the movie, and there was like somebody dying on the street, and they were like, "I'll bring you to the hospital." They're like, "No, just kill me, just like take me out."
That's so hardcore.
And so I like wrote that, but with like a dog and a cat. I had no idea what's going on. Like I had no idea what it meant. I handed that in. Like they must have thought I was like a red flag from day one.
And like, how old were you when this was going on?
I mean, how old are you in first grade?
Like six.
Dang.
Wow.
Yeah, I was always like before I could even write, like putting on plays with my best friend Jason at the time.
Nice.
For our parents and charging them money because we knew how to make money. Because you know. I'm not a businessman. I'm a businessman now. Yeah, art and commerce, I guess, has always been connected. But in my mind, but yeah, my parents were really supportive. My dad was the first in his family to go to college, so I was always going to college from day one, and I was free to choose whatever I wanted to study, and I knew I wanted to study film. The thing that's been interesting lately as more and more in sort of the public sphere, like you hear in, what was that book, Sapiens, by Yuval Harari, talking about sort of the human story of our species and how like the thing that may be most unique to us is stories. And like what we are is stories as much as we are our biology.
Yeah.
Stories allow us uniquely as a species to like organize across genetic boundaries and do all these interesting things, like create this idea called money, which may be running amok. But, you know, just like I think I've always felt like storytelling is how I like writing is how I get to know myself better and also how I can deal with things that maybe don't feel like they're working. So, you know, when I feel no control, it's like a place to go. And then, you know, when I'm feeling out of control. And then, I don't know if this is really answering the question.
No, but that makes sense because you just said you saw that show where the character died and then you tried to process that by writing about a dog and a cat where something similar happened. And even though you didn't totally understand what was going on, that was still like you taking in information from the world and like using this as a tool to kind of figure out like what is going on there.
It's a little bit of like, we're going to like through writing, take this Lego set that we're seeing apart and then try to put it back together to see if we understand the engineering that goes into it.
Yeah, I guess so. I think really it's just been a terrible addiction from day one and I don't know myself without it. And I can't give it up because I don't know anything else.
That's so real.
But yeah, I love storytelling, I think.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's so funny when you were both saying like how it was kind of like also an escape, like where you're like, okay, like I'm home from school and whatnot. Because I have two brothers. I have an older brother and a younger brother. I very much have like kind of middle child syndrome sometimes. Hmm. But I was also surrounded by a lot of kids with anger management issues. Hmm. So for me, like stories became so important in order to like kind of escape what was happening in the moment. So like I remember I'd be at like my neighbor's house and the boys would be having like a meltdown and I would just be like sitting in the corner quietly reading. Nice. I was like, well, if I can pretend to be in this fantasy, then like I'm okay.
Right.
And I'm also then not contributing to the problem. Because like if I got upset, then that's just going to make everything worse. You know, you don't need another kid who's having a meltdown.
Right.
So like stories then became also kind of like a self-regulation of my emotions as well, where it's like, all right, I got my story. I got like either my book or my daydreams or what have you.
Yeah.
Like I can then like center myself like using that and then be able to like better handle like whatever is happening around me.
I really like that. And it's bringing up memories of like, I guess like, so on the one hand, my grandfather was like one very prominent male figure in my life, and he was very Jewish because I didn't know at the time he was surviving cancer with it and turned 7 months into 7 years with religion.
Wow.
The downside was a questioning eight-year-old suddenly went from like the belle of the ball to like this little demon child that was like trying to destroy his reality. So he, you know, destroyed me. No. But it's fine. I survived, basically. And then on the other hand, so like there was a lot of like, you know, oh, it's like, you know, our tradition, the past, like, you know, we have to like remember how we've suffered and how to avoid, you know, like his father pulled them out of Poland right before that got invaded by the Nazis. And then they left France right before they got, you know, so they got really lucky mm-hmm. with that. And it was, you know, it's very backwards looking and yeah. sort of like using stories to remember our trauma so we can prevent future trauma. Then on, you know, my dad's side, like he introduced me at a young age to this thing called Landmark, which I've gotten a lot of value out of. And I also like, you know, it's like an intense culture. Mm-hmm. If you know anything about it, it's like self-development work. And I think there's a lot of great stuff about it. And like everything, there's another side of the coin. And it's very future oriented and like how you are right now is a product of the future you're living into. So if you're like just worried about trauma, like that's just a story that's like limiting and, you know, like a sort of violence in a way. And that's maybe not what they would say. This is just me, you know, sort of this is just I can only speak for myself. But yeah, so I feel like I was torn in these two directions of like what stories are for and what their purpose is. Like one is this sort of like remembrance and this other is this creation. And I feel like those two tensions have been something that I've been working through as an artist and as somebody who wants to make a living with words and you know, derivative media adaptations, video and whatnot.
I mean, that's so interesting because both of them are contextualizing who you are in the present, right? So like right. the way that you think about your past and the way you think about your future is very like indicative of who you are in like the present moment. And like for me, rather than feeling as if it's like pulling me apart, it's just like instead adding to my current identity of how I think about myself now. And like kind of like using that as like a structure for like how I think about myself has been like really helpful personally for me. So it's like so interesting for you. Instead, it is kind of a little bit more of like that pulling apart, like that tension.
All right, you guys, I think that is the time that we have today here at No Bad Ideas. But yeah, thank you so much for coming and hanging out and helping us to put together this bad idea story and for this really, really great conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Kidding us,
our pleasure.
What are you working on today or right now? Like, where can people find more of your stuff?
Well, we are just wrapping up the second season of this kind of magic realist audio drama, The Far Meridian. So that's been the big thing. Very much looking forward to that hiatus. And by the time this comes out, I believe the live show will have happened, right?
It will have happened a few days ago, yep. Yes.
So we just then in the future, we will have just done a live show for The Far Meridian in New York. So hopefully that went well. And then as far as future projects, nothing I can talk about right now, which is like the worst thing to be like, oh, guys, I have this cool project, but I can't like tell you anything about it. But definitely
me and Zach often live in that place, unfortunately.
But yeah, let's just say my spreadsheet of projects is kind of horrifying to look at because it is a long list. But super exciting, you know, constantly working, obsessed with stories, just like you fine folks. So I guess you can probably keep an eye out for any other projects I'm working on for Twitter at Eli Lizzie Lisbeth. That is my Twitter handle. So it's probably the best place to check that out.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for coming on. And thank you to your listeners for tuning into No Bad Ideas.
Thank you. Future.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.